From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Thank you, Mark Rhodes, for supporting me and this podcast by making a pledge at my Patreon page. Do you want to hear your name here at the top of the show? Are you enjoying this podcast and would like to help me make more episodes? Then head over to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It means a great deal to me and you will get to headline the show just like Mark did today. Welcome to episode number 137, where I'm joined by returning extraordinary woman and listener favourite Amy Berger. Amy Berger, MS, CNS, is a US Air Force veteran and certified nutrition specialist who specialises in low carbohydrate and ketogenic diets. Her motto is Keto Without the Crazy, clearing up the confusion and making keto straightforward and simple to follow. She blogs at chewitnutrition.com, where she writes about weight loss, metabolism, diabetes, thyroid function, and more. She has presented internationally on these topics and is the author of The Alzheimer's Antidote, Using a low-carb, high-fat diet to fight Alzheimer's disease, memory loss, and cognitive decline. Her latest book, The Stool Slayer, is about how to break a fat loss stool on keto and is available to buy as an ebook at stoolslayer.com. You can get 15% off by using code DAISY at the checkout. It will soon also be available on Amazon, both as a paperback and a Kindle download. It's always a pleasure to chat to Amy, and this time we get to hear what is going on outside her window too. I'm going with, it allows you to enjoy a fully immersive experience. For anyone who gets FOMO about her KetoFest 2019 presentation, I'll add a link in the show notes with a timestamp just for you. Welcome back, Amy, to the Keto Woman podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, it's nice to see you. It's been a while. I've been meaning to get in touch with you for ages. And before I know it, over a year has gone by. Funny how that happens.
It's crazy. I don't know when this will air, but we're recording on June 2nd. And it's mind blowing to me that it's June already.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? This year is going very, very quickly. How are you doing in this weird world we're living in right now? I think we're both a bit reclusive by nature, so it's not so much of a shock for us.
Yeah, I'm a huge introvert, and even before the virus thing, I worked from home anyway, and I have no children, so my situation is, I almost feel bad saying it. My life is almost unchanged from how it was before. I mean, my gym is closed, and there's certain places I would have gone that are closed, but for the most part, I cook at home a lot anyway. I don't eat out all that often, so it's, my life is not as disturbed as others, but it's opened my eyes to the fact that when things do open up again, I want to become more involved in my community and support more local businesses and stuff. So looking forward to doing that when things get a little closer back to normal.
What is it like where you are? It seems it's very different, isn't it, in the States? Every state is a bit different about when it does things and how it does things, rather than the sort of the blanket measures somewhere like where I live in France.
Yeah, so I live in North Carolina, and I think the state is gradually opening some things up. There's different phases, like certain types of businesses can open and then others will be delayed longer. But the particular city I'm in has its own rules that are a little bit stricter. We're kind of going to do things a little later. So, you know, essential businesses and stuff are open. The grocery stores are open. Different types of services are open. But there is a mandatory mask law and or face covering. So if you go into certain businesses, you have to, you know, cover your face with something, which is, you know, reasonable as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. It makes sense to me that busier places like cities would actually have a slightly different timescale than somewhere that's much more rural.
Yeah, and but I feel fortunate too in that, you know, some cities have been really strict in different curfews and lockdowns and stuff. But here, if you're outside and you're not in a crowded place, you don't have to cover your face. So I can still go for walks. I can still just be outside and you don't have to really wear a mask, which is nice.
Yeah, same here. And we've got the same thing, and different things are opening up and different places have different restrictions and different kind of businesses. Like I went to the hairdressers the other day and they have different restrictions from the supermarkets and so on and so forth. Restaurants are opening up next week, I think, apparently, which is going to be interesting. Mm. Not quite sure how that's going to work. They've got these weird measures where obviously you can't be wearing a mask all the time in a restaurant or you're not going to be able to eat. But apparently you're supposed to put a mask on if you get up from your table and move around a bit. But
yeah,
that seems crazy because on the other hand, you have the advice, it's not sensible to be putting on and taking off your mask all the time. So yeah, sometimes I just get the impression these people who are setting the rules haven't quite thought them through.
Yeah, I see so much mixed information. I honestly don't really know what to believe. And you know, from people I trust, hearing very different messages. So I follow the law. I follow the city decrees. I do what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, I don't know.
Exactly. Just be sensible and thoughtful, I think, is the main motto. If everyone went by, we'd probably all get on a lot better. Anyway, enough. Well, it's not exactly chit-chat, is it, COVID? It's a bit, it's a bit more intense than idle chit-chat. But we're here to talk about you. And in particular, I've been wanting to talk to you about, it shows how long ago this was, but your Keto Fest presentation from last year, which was my favorite of the day.
Oh, thank you.
And I think it resonated with a lot of people, and much more to do with, you know, moving away from the basics of keto and onto when you've been doing it for a while and you're still struggling and you can't really figure out why, and just bringing up to the surface some of the things that, well, a lot of people don't talk about that you felt it was important to talk about. Mm-hmm. So maybe you could share some of that with us now.
Yeah, I mean, for people that were not at Keto Fest 2019, I guess it was, I gave a talk that was basically sharing my own personal struggles that I still have with food and with eating, and bringing it to the larger keto community, because I think in the clients I deal with and then in what I see on social media also, it looks like everyone else has this all figured out, right? Everyone's got keto mastered. They never cheat on carbs. They never binge, whether it's on carbs or just binging on keto foods, binging on pork rinds, binging on macadamia nuts, whatever. we all tend to think that everyone else is doing better than we are, however you define better, you know, where everyone else is sticking to this and they love keto and they never miss donuts and everything's perfect. And that is so far from the truth. You know, there are some people that have it completely mastered. They have never been ever tempted by a cookie since the minute they went keto. They've never looked back. They've never had a problem. And great for them. God bless, you know. But when we're not more honest about the fact that it's not, you know, as pristine and perfect as it looks, then other people hide and they feel ashamed. They feel alone. They feel isolated because they think they're the only one. They think they're the only one who still, however often, reaches for the sugar and the carbs. Or, you know, somebody like me personally, I don't really binge on carbs. I think once in a while I have some starch, you know, but in general, I can overeat low carb foods. I can binge on just about anything. I can eat a massive quantity of broccoli, a massive quantity of prime rib or whatever it is. And we need to be more public and more open about these issues because you're not alone. If anyone out there listening to this is, you know, has been feeling ashamed and worried because they think that everyone else has it mastered. My apologies for that beeping. I do have my windows open. There's a truck backing up outside. I don't know if the microphone's picking it up. Anyway, you have to know you're not alone. And I get emails from people like, you know, in this situation pretty often. And the first thing I say is, you are not alone. This is a very, very common problem. The only reason you don't hear about it more often is because everybody's too ashamed and embarrassed to talk about it publicly. And it's time to break that silence, because none of this means that you're a bad person or that you're a weak person or that something's wrong with you. It just means that just because we know what to do doesn't mean it's going to be easy to do it. You know, like I had a slide in that talk that made the distinction between the words simple and easy. Mm. Keto is very simple, right? All you have to do is keep your total carbs very, very low. Don't eat sugar and starch. It's really simple. That doesn't mean it's easy, especially at a time like this, like with the lockdowns and everything. Some people are doing better because they're maybe cooking more at home. They're not dining out as much. Some people are doing worse for the same reason, where maybe if they don't have a lot of cooking skills, they're just making whatever's handy or whatever they know how to make, boiling some pasta. Whereas if they were at a restaurant, they could order a steak and broccoli. So it's people go in different directions. But anyway, the main point to really hammer home is that this is far more common than is discussed typically. And it's, you know, if you're new to low carb and keto, you do need to hear about the basics. You need to hear about fats and proteins and carbohydrates and insulin and blood glucose. But if you've been at this for any length of time, several weeks, many of us have been doing this for a couple of years now, you don't need to hear that anymore. You know what you need to do. If you're not doing it, now we need to move beyond the nuts and bolts of how to do keto and low carb. Now we need to move into, okay, you know what to do. What are the obstacles that are in your way of actually doing it or doing it for the long term? Some people do really well for a few weeks or months and then massively go off plan or whatever it is. So that's, I'm going to stop talking now because.
No, that's what you're here for. People want to hear you talking, not me talking. But absolutely, it's like you say, it is really simple, but it's not necessarily easy. And there are people that do find it really easy. And there are some people that all the magic happens. You know, they're suddenly filled with boundless energy that they almost don't know what to do with. You know, they just have to get up and run, or they have to get up and lift weights or whatever, because they've got so much energy. And, you know, their brain is just pulsing with energy and their cravings are gone. You know, they're gone. They never have a craving ever again. And, you know, wonderful, especially if these people didn't have any of those things before. I sometimes think there's a slice of the population who's very motivated and on point with whatever diet or way of eating they choose to do. And they adopt keto for one reason or another, and they just transfer that motivation and ease of sticking to the rules and not having issues with it. Mm-hmm. Then there are other people who have had all these problems and genuinely find all those things melt away. But then there's a large bulk of us who don't suddenly have boundless energy and still have some cravings. And that's this sort of just large, difficult grey area that, especially if you're the kind of person that compares yourself to others, like you say, you do kind of hide away and just feel a bit ashamed. And why isn't it working for me? And of course, we're used to blaming ourselves. So what is it I'm doing wrong?
Right. And it is hard. You know, I know this is kind of a slightly different topic, but for a couple of years, I didn't attend any of the keto and low carb events because I felt that I didn't like my appearance. I felt that I was larger than I quote unquote should be, especially for somebody that is a professional nutritionist and markets themselves as some kind of like keto professional. We hear that from a lot of people, you know, well, I'd love to go to Keto Fest or I'd love to go to this or that, but I'm ashamed about the way I look. People will wonder, you know, why she's still heavy, what's she doing wrong? And that's, like I said, that's a slightly different topic. But yeah, we just think everyone else has it mastered. And I just know that we cannot assume anything by the way anyone looks because, you know, maybe they are living the perfect, ideal, charmed keto life. And then maybe something's going on behind the scenes that we don't know about, that they're going to other extreme lengths off camera. You know, this isn't the stuff they post to Instagram and Facebook and everything. You know, what's going on when the camera's off? How much are they struggling, or how much are they restricting or exercising or whatever? And I'm not accusing anyone of anything. I'm just saying that, for our own mental health, it's best not to make any assumptions about anyone because we don't know what's going on really in somebody's life, for better or worse, you know. And it just that comparison, they call it compare and despair. You know, we just assume everyone else has it easier or is doing better, and we just have no idea. And I have to remind myself of that so much because I fall into this trap just as much as anyone else.
Me too. I have these conversations sometimes with friends or people I admire and find out, you know, that they have whatever it is, maybe some, you know, self-esteem issues or whatever it is that I wouldn't have realized from that outer shell that I see. And I think that's the problem with comparison, is you're comparing yourself and probably what you think is the worst part of yourself to the best part of, you know, the glossy version of somebody else. So you're not even comparing like to like with a different person. You know, you're comparing these extremes that are just going to make you feel rubbish, yeah. Whatever way you look at it.
It's so true. And like the phrase I've heard people use is that you're comparing your outtakes to somebody else's highlight reel, right? You're comparing your worst moments and your biggest weaknesses and flaws, or what you perceive to be your weaknesses and flaws, against somebody's perfect, ideal, you know, whatever it's called, their perfection. And that's just not how it works.
It's so true. You talk about this mythical client called Pia, which, spoiler alert, turns out to be you. And you talk about, am I allowed to say which food it is that you're talking about? You don't actually mention it in the talk, but I did ask you afterwards what it was. And I share a similar problem.
Yeah, we can say it because it is probably the single number one most common binge food. So yeah, go ahead.
Well, yours was peanut butter and mine used to be peanut butter. I've actually discovered that almond butter slightly tips it on the scales of being even more addictive. Mm-hmm. But yes, you know, I'll be brutally honest. I occasionally make the hideous mistake of ordering kilogram jars of almond butter. These tubs come in kilogram size, so they're big. What's that? Just over 2 pounds, right. 2 pounds of almond butter. And I will get through that in 3 or 4 days, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that to me that shows a complete lack of control with that food.
Yeah. Well, I would do the same with peanut butter. And I, like you could see, I mean, people, I don't think people get to see this video, but it's, I'm not laughing at all. Like I'm not, I'm with you in solidarity. Like, it's not, I know you're not joking. I know this is serious because I've done it. And for whatever reason, you know, people that didn't hear the talk last year, I was quite literally addicted to the peanut butter. And I'm not even talking about the sugary peanut butter. Mm. I mean the kind that was literally just ground up peanuts or sometimes just peanuts and salt.
Perfect keto
food. No added oil, no added sugar. Mm. I could just go to town on this like there was no tomorrow. And I did it almost every single night without exception. And I have been, I will use the word abstinent, for over 2 years now. I haven't had one bit of it, not even one peanut, because I could binge on peanuts too, not just peanut butter. Mm-hmm. I could get a jar of like just dry roasted peanuts. Oh, so delicious. But, and I don't know what made me stop, because I had tried to stop so many times. I even, you know, quote unquote, confessed, for lack of a better word, to some of my friends. Listen, I have a problem with food. I need some help. Can I check in with you? Can I let you know how I'm doing every couple of days? Thinking that having that accountability would somehow help me break the behavior. And it didn't. It never helped. Mm. And I don't know what it was that made me stop. I'm just so glad that I did stop. And one day I was just done and I haven't bought it since. And it's like, you know, peanut butter is totally acceptable on a low carb or ketogenic diet. But when you're eating half a jar of it every night, that's, you know, that's a problem. Mm. If you're trying to lose weight, right? Maybe you can do that and have other things be totally fine. And in fact, they were. My blood work was fine at the time, but I was heavier. I was gaining weight and, you know, what a shock. I wonder why. But that just goes to show that it doesn't even really have to be the keto cakes and the keto brownies and the erythritol sweetened muffins and blah, blah, blah. You can really overeat anything. And there does definitely seem to be something uniquely triggering about nut butters and seed butters as well, something like a sunflower seed butter, pumpkin seed butter. But peanut butter seems to be in a class by itself, even beyond almond butter and cashew butter and things like that. And for me, I mentioned this in the talk, that one of the reasons I was able to eat such insane quantities of the peanut butter is that it's so cheap. I couldn't afford to binge. Like, almond butter couldn't have been my binge food because I couldn't afford it. It's so at least in the US, it's like maybe 4 or 5 times the price of peanut butter. Mm. So I'm just so glad. I wish that I had an answer as to like, well, I did this particular action and that's what let me quit the peanut butter. And I don't. One day I just stopped after literally a year or two of trying to quit. And I don't miss it. It is so delicious. I know it's delicious. And it's not like I haven't been around it. I mean, peanuts and peanut butter are everywhere. My boyfriend eats peanuts. Hmm. I have to kiss him. He's got peanut breath, but I'm not even tempted anymore because I know what a low emotional place I was in when I was binging on that every night. And I have no desire to go back there. I can't speak to any other addiction or food addiction, or like if somebody has an alcohol addiction or some other issue, I don't know what that's like for them. You know, being with friends, let's say at an event where there's alcohol being served, I don't know if they feel like I do when I'm around peanuts, like just nope, I'm not even interested. But that was my experience with this. And for those who may be dealing with an alcohol situation or have a relative who is like, I am definitely not equating the two. Like alcoholism, I'm not trying to say that binging on peanut butter is as destructive as that, but certainly it was destructive in its own way, you know, mentally and emotionally and physically to my weight. So one thing I'll say, and this is a little off topic, but not entirely. When I get out of control with low carb foods, and I mean, again, binging, quote unquote, on steak or broccoli or pork, because I could just eat a large amount of food. I can out eat most men I know who are twice my size for whatever reason. I just don't have the off switch. That being said, I am absolutely convinced that there is a truth to what they call the metabolic advantage of a ketogenic diet. Supposedly, when you're in a ketogenic state, to put it simply, you can eat more, but gain less weight, or your metabolism is a little bit different such that eating the same amount of calories as someone else who's maybe on a high carb diet, it affects you differently. And I can say with almost complete certainty that that's true because I did gain weight, or I do gain weight when I go crazy on low carb foods, but I do not gain anywhere near as much weight as you would predict based on the number of calories, right? Based on the total amount of food energy I'm consuming. So I do think there is an advantage there. And it's maybe not as large as they thought it was back in like Dr. Atkins's time, but there is definitely something to it. Like if I was eating the same caloric quantity of donuts and cookies and whatever, I'm fairly certain I would have been much, much larger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I saw an interesting talk at, well, you were there too. You probably saw it. It was the talk by Ben Bickman who was talking about that slight advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to dig it out for the show notes. It was a very good presentation.
Yeah.
Do you have any theories for, because as you say, it's a very common food to be addicted to. It's a very common food that people find they might not necessarily be that level addicted to it, but they would almost unquestionably say they overeat it. If you asked a huge group of people, which keto foods do you tend to lose control a bit over, find it difficult to hit that off switch?
Mm-hmm.
And the most common foods that will come up will be, apart from the typical sweet things, will be nuts and seeds, nut butters and cheese. You know, they seem to be the most common culprits.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about nuts and nut butters that make it addictive and make it have that effect that you want to carry on eating? I mean, my theory is actually that it has quite a lot to do with the carb content.
Huh. It's possible. I have a lot of speculation. I don't know if any of these are scientifically accurate, but my thought, it could partly be the carbs, because if you look at something like peanuts or cashews compared to something like macadamia nuts or pecans or walnuts, they are higher in carbs because technically they're legumes, right? They're not technically nuts, although that's just splitting hairs, really. So it could be that they are slightly higher in carbs, although people will still binge on macadamias or almonds, and those are lower in carbs. Now, they're not carb-free, they're not devoid of carbs.
Well, that's the problem. That comes down to a sort of quantity thing, doesn't it? If you know, if you were having a recommended serving, the carb content in itself wouldn't be that much.
That's a good point. Yeah. Well, and I also think this is why I think people are just wired differently, and what satisfies your appetite or satiates you are different. You know, it differs from person to person, because some people fill up with fat, and nuts are very fat dense. I mean, they have a little bit of carbohydrate, but they're far higher in fat than they are in carbohydrate. And even though they are so energy dense, so calorically dense and fat dense, they don't fill me up. It's why I can eat an entire bag of almonds and not feel full. You know, I might feel bad mentally and emotionally because I feel ashamed or I feel guilty or I start kind of that self-loathing spiral, but physically I don't feel stuffed. And it's almost the same with cheese. Cheese, at some point, I just have to tell myself, Amy, you've had enough cheese. You have to put this back in the fridge because it's so calorically dense and energy dense, but I can just eat it and eat it. And maybe that's why it doesn't really provoke that off switch, at least not in me, and apparently not in a lot of other people. But I don't, some people will say that this isn't true of nuts, but it is true of cheese and of dairy in general, that it literally is addictive. It has peptides, like protein fragments, that kind of affect the neurochemistry of appetite and the brain. It's actually called casomorphine, like from the casein.
Don't they mimic opioids or something?
Yes, exactly.
I remember reading an article. Yeah.
That's the casomorphine, just like a morphine, like affecting you biochemically in that way. Some people do claim to have like a cheese addiction or a dairy addiction, and I believe it.
Oh, yeah.
Dairy is
very
difficult to give up for some people.
Mm-hmm.
That's all just my guesswork. I don't really know, but it is odd that the nuts and cheese are really probably two of the most common binge foods and trigger foods. And this is why, if you guys know Dr. Eric Westman, he's famous for that page 4 diet. Page 4 limits cheese to, I think, 3 or 4 ounces a day. And nuts are not permitted at all. And it's not because nuts aren't a perfectly good keto food. It's just that he knows this is the most common trigger food. And it's so easy to just eat a massive quantity. And it's for me and many other people, it's easier to have none at all than it is to try to moderate that and say, I'll just have 1 ounce. because there is no such thing as 1 ounce of nuts for me. My serving of nuts is half the bag or half the jar or whatever it is. So it's easier for me to have zero than it is for me to try to stop myself once I've started.
And some people do really well in buying, you know, a Costco size massive bag, portioning it up, putting it in the freezer or whatever, and just having a serving size at once. Mm-hmm. And no, that doesn't work for me. Because yeah. I'll just eat 10 serving bags. You know, right. It doesn't matter if you, I suppose there's a slight, there's that sort of slight resistance that you might think twice about opening multiple bags, but you know, yeah, just no off switch. I think doesn't the induction phase of Atkins reduce cheese as well? The amount of cheese you're supposed to eat? I got a feeling it does.
I don't remember. It might be limited in some way. I don't remember the specifics.
No, I don't. But definitely common problem foods. There was one more thing there that, just looking at my notes here before we go on to talk about your fabulous new book. And this is one of the things that I have to apply. And I'm lucky because I live alone, so I don't have to take anyone else into account. But my way of dealing with those foods is not to have them in the house and not to buy them. Mm-hmm. But there was a quote here. You were quoting someone else and I've forgotten who it was. But the quote was, if you're in the store and you put an item in your cart, you are going to eat it. Uh-huh. So don't kid yourself.
Yeah, that's from a guy named John Berardi, who runs a company called Precision Nutrition. And they're not keto specific, but they're very, very science-based, really good sort of nutrition coaching organization that I've been following a long time. I really like their work. And he calls it Berardi's corollary. If something goes into your cart, you will eat it. Yeah, don't kid yourself. You are going to bring it home. You are going to eat it. You might even eat it in the car on the way home. Like, it's not even going to make it to your home. And that's good advice, except that sometimes you still buy it. Like, oh, like, again, we know what to do. Why do we sometimes not do it? Mm-hmm. You know, oh, all I have to do is not buy that thing. Yeah. Oh, shoot, but I bought it again. Oh, and I bought two of them. Like, so it's sometimes it's easier said than done. But like I said, for me with the peanut butter, it was so darn cheap that it was easy to buy a new jar every 3 days. You know, with other foods, like, I couldn't do that. Mm. So it's, I don't know. I do feel a little embarrassed and fraudulent talking about this, but at the same time, I also know that still dealing with my own issues keeps me humble. It keeps me empathetic to the people that come to me or to the people that I see online. I'm never going to be one of these people who you see on social media that takes a hard line, like, why are you doing that? What's wrong with you? You know, what, you're eating sugar. What are you, an idiot? You're such a moron. What are you, killing yourself? Like, that is really ridiculous rhetoric and unfair and demeaning and unnecessary. The people that are in this state where we're just having trouble doing what we know we should do, we don't need shaming and blame and judging. We need understanding. We need empathy. We need encouragement. We need mutual support and lifting us up when we're down. And I'm tired of, like, the holier than thou-ness I see in keto. There's so much of it. And it's not really helping anyone. Now, there's some people, and myself included, depending on the situation, I reply, you know, respond really well to tough love. Like, Amy, just get your head on straight. What are you doing? Stop screwing around. Just do the thing. And then in other situations, whether it's food or not, other aspects of life, I need a little more gentle touch. I need, like, Amy, it's going to be fine. You can do this. Just take your time. It's not a contest. You know, people say when people quit smoking, it's the rare person that succeeds with smoking cessation the first time. Sometimes people have to attempt to quit 3, 4, 10 times. Sometimes it's the same with keto. If you've been trying, quote unquote, trying keto for a year or two and it hasn't stuck yet, you know what? Just keep trying. Or, you know, try to find out why you're having a hard time. Of course, you know, knowing why we have a hard time with anything maybe helps us fix it. because some, you know, like when I talk about this food stuff, some people will say, well, you don't need to know why you're binging. You just need to stop. Like, or you don't need to know why you're having this problem. You just need to find the solution. And that's true. But I think for some people, knowing why is necessary, because until they know why, if the binging or the overeating or the eating carbs, whatever it is, if that's the result, not the cause. The cause is some underlying thing that you might not even be aware of, but it's there. Mm. And it's causing you to overeat or to eat sugar or whatever. You're not going to be able to stop that behavior until you address the root cause. Like I work at a local farm twice a week. You have a lot of time to think while you're pulling weeds for 4 hours a day. And so the other, you know, last week I was literally weeding half the day. And it occurred to me that, you know, when you pull weeds out of a garden, you don't just cut the top off and you have to pull it out by the roots from the ground. Otherwise, it's just going to come back. Mm. It's just going to keep growing back. You can't just lop the head off. You have to remove the thing entirely. And it's the same with these behaviors that we have. It's going to be very difficult to stop the behavior until you attack it at the root of, okay, why do I have this behavior? And I've been reading a lot about this sort of self-help, and you know, it's self-help is not a dirty word, right? It's not a dirty phrase. And one of the people that I really, really like and whose work I've benefited from says, whatever habit you have, and of course here we're kind of talking about food, but it could be any type of addiction, any type of self-destructive habit or behavior, whatever you're doing because it benefits you in some way. Even if it's only to escape life for a few minutes or a few hours, or to zone out, or to soothe yourself from some hurt that was inflicted upon you. And so we can be ashamed and be mad, like, oh, I'm so stupid, I'm so weak, what's wrong with me? Or you can say, thank goodness that this behavior has gotten me through whatever it needed to get me through, because I'm still alive and I'm still here. So in some way, it has helped me survive to another day. And when I'm ready, when I no longer need this behavior to help me, the behavior is going to go away. So that's like a much more gentle way of looking at it. You know, you thank the behavior, you know, thank you for providing whatever service you've been providing, but I'm good now. I don't need you anymore. Let's work on getting you out of my life.
Yeah.
Is that weird? I know that's very, Mark Sisson would call it airy fairy. It's a little woo woo, but it helps me. Maybe it'll help someone else out there.
Well, I completely agree. And you're basically describing the type of therapy that my counselor used. It's called internal family systems. And they talk about these parts of you a bit like characters. And basically what the root of it is, some kind of trauma that happened usually when you're a child. And this exile, it's called, was created. And then what has happened over the years is that exile, that child is in pain, right? And your body creates these parts to protect you from that pain. And one big group is called the firefighters, and they're things like overeating. It tends to be a soothing quality, if you like, you know, putting the fire out. That's why they're called firefighters. They soothe that pain with whatever it is, eating, drugs, alcohol, it doesn't matter. But then you have this opposing force, which is also a part that's trying to protect you, which is the critic, which sort of tries to nag you out of it and criticize you. And you get in this dreadful cycle of these two sort of combating each other, and you just go round and round and round. And you're right, until you can take a step back and realize that these parts that have just got a bit exaggerated and it ends up being destructive behavior, when you recognize that all they started out was actually a way of protecting you from pain. And yeah, if you can take a step back and thank them from that and try and find out what's underneath, it can be really helpful.
Yeah.
Difficult. It can be difficult, but
yeah.
You talked about, and you had several books with you at the presentation at Keto Fest, because I think people might have been expecting, the way the talk was going, that maybe you were going to have a magic solution for all this and that, you know, you could tell people how you managed to give up this addictive food that you were talking about.
Oh,
but
wish.
You didn't have the answers. But what you were saying really was that you just wanted to bring it up to the surface and get people talking about it more.
Yeah. And that's still kind of all I want. I mean, if people have stress strategies that have helped them and solutions that have helped, by all means, share them. Because I do think different things are going to work for different people. But if you don't know what the options are, you're not going to try anything if you don't have a couple of ideas of things to try. But at this point, I think it's just really important to, like you said, open the conversation again. Let the people know who think they're the only ones. You are definitely not the only one. It's just very common and no one talks about it. And, cause keto, you know, we hear about this all the time. People with very severe, whether it's binge eating or bulimia or all kinds of, you know, problems with food, some people go on a low carb ketogenic diet and it does completely go away, completely resolve. They never have a problem again. That's not the case for everybody. It doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. I think there's always something that can be done about it that you can try, but you have to, I don't know, you have to see that there's a problem first.
Mm, I agree. It's definitely an open-ended conversation, but it's one a lot of us need to have, I think.
Yeah.
But moving on to your book. This is your second book, I believe, and you're working on another one. That might be a bit of a secret. I won't divulge any more about that.
No, but we're good to at least mention the third book, but let's start with this one.
Let's start with the current one. I like the name. It sounds a bit like something from Game of Thrones. Why don't you tell us about it?
So it's called The Stall Slayer. It's about exactly what it sounds like it's about. It's about breaking fat loss stalls on ketogenic or low-carb diets, which is one of the most common problems that people face. Why am I not losing weight? What am I doing wrong? And so I just offer several different possibilities as to why the fat loss isn't going the way somebody wishes it were. And also some thinking points just to get people to recognize maybe I'm not even in a stall. Maybe I'm actually already at a perfectly normal weight and I'm trying to shoehorn my body into a lower weight that it doesn't want to be at. You know, like these sort of last 5 to 8 vanity pounds, I'll call them. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're perfectly healthy and you feel good physically, mentally, emotionally, you have energy and all that, can you be okay with carrying an extra 2 or 5 pounds? Like, is it working against you in some way? Or so there's a lot in the book. And right now, just so people know, it's a PDF right now. It's only a PDF, but within the next few weeks, it's going to be on Amazon for Kindle as well as a paperback.
Fantastic.
So in the meantime, for now, stallslayer.com is where you can learn about it and you can download it from there, stallslayer.com.
And it's great. I did a bit of a speed read of it. You very kindly sent it to me last night. So I got down to that and went through it as quickly as I could. A very, very good read. And like you say, it breaks down into different kind of topics that you might find that some or all are things that are the reason for your stall and how to potentially slay them. Like I say, I like the title. But yeah, it definitely, well, unsurprisingly, has your voice. I mentioned earlier that sort of slightly snarky tone, which I really like, but conversational, a bit of sarcasm and your wit. So anyone who's enjoyed reading any of your articles, I think is going to enjoy it very much. And you did mention to me that there could be a discount code for the listeners. We're going to add that to the show notes.
Yeah, I'm going to set that up. It'll Fantastic. Be enter the code DAISY, DAISY, at checkout for 15% off. Sometimes the platform that I sell it through sometimes just gives the discount without even putting any code in. So
Okay.
If it looks like a couple of dollars have come off, then the discount is already there. But you can just either way enter DAISY at checkout and that'll be a couple of bucks off.
Perfect. That's the beauty of these ebooks. They're there on your device straight away.
Right. And for people, you know, I'm old fashioned. I prefer to read things in hard copy. If you want to read a hard copy, you can either wait a couple of weeks till it's on Amazon for paperback, or there's a printer friendly version. And you'll see that on the website, stallslayer.com. Just buy the printer friendly version and print it out at home to read.
And I like it throughout. There are some blocked in colors, some sort of salient points from that page or that chapter. I've got a page full of quotes here. I won't give the game away where I read them all out. But you mentioned that about thinking about whether you are actually stalled, especially when you're quite close to your target weight. And there's one here. I suggest not having a goal weight at all. Goals, yes. a goal weight? No.
Yeah. That's a really, it's a huge point. And I think I kind of explain it this way in the book. If you start out with a number in mind, I want to weigh X pounds or X kilos or stone or whatever. And let's say you get there and you're still not happy. Now what are you going to do? You've met your goal, but you're still unhappy. Or you might be perfectly thrilled with how you look and feel, yet you're 3 or 5 or 8 or 10 pounds higher than you wanted to be. Then you're going to feel like a failure when you're doing perfectly great. So I don't like the number on the scale is not a good primary goal. I think take your measurements, get a pair of pants or a skirt that is tight, and then try that on every 2 weeks or so, or have a goal. You know, so not everyone does keto for fat. I mean, the book obviously is about fat loss, but if you're doing keto for some other reason, then you don't have to have a goal related to your size or weight at all. You can just say, I want to be able to do 10 push-ups, or I want to be able to get up without my joints hurting, or whatever it is. And so I just think, you know, whenever I get a client who's really interested in weight loss, I always make sure, okay, what else can we use to gauge how this is working for you? Because, you know, I understand you're concerned about your body fat and your weight, and we'll look at that. But what else can we look at to see how this is going? Energy, your skin, your libido, you know, your digestion, whatever, brain fog, all this different stuff. So to use weight as the only thing is not that great for some people.
Yeah, it's kind of meaningless. I mean, I had this target. It was 10 stone, I think, in old money. And I did get to it. And it was like, oh, okay. And then kind of everything, I let everything go and started eating all the things again. And I stayed at my goal weight for all of about 2 weeks. But you're right. It's kind of just, it needs fleshing out. It's this whole building your why, isn't it? And really getting some details with it. And it's much better to have goals like, well, my goal is to be able to go running with my dogs, or to, you know, keep up with my kids playing football in the park, and get this really detailed picture of something that's going to have real meaning to you. Mm-hmm. And yes, we're talking about losing weight here, that's the reason for the book, but you can still attach these emotional goals that have meaning to you, that losing weight is a necessary part of that, but rather than just being this arbitrary number, it has this real lovely meaning to it as well.
Yeah.
So, great book. Everyone should go out and buy it right now. But as we mentioned earlier, it's not the only book on Horizon. There's another one coming out later this year. Perhaps you could just tease us a bit about that.
Yeah. So we just sent the first draft to the publisher. I'm actually teaming up with Eric Westman. We're writing a book, and it's a bit of a departure for him because, you know, he's built his whole career on this page 4, 20 grams of carbs or fewer, like just this super, super strict keto, because that's what has worked best in his clinic. But my whole thing since day one of being in this profession, not everybody needs keto. Keto is obviously really, really powerful and really effective, but not everyone needs to be quite so strict. It's not the only way to be healthy. It's not the only way to be fit. I've even had some clients here and there who I had to encourage to eat more carbs based on their particular situation and their needs. They would be better served by eating more carbohydrate, not 300 or 400 grams a day, but, you know, 100 grams, because these are people doing, you know, highly intensive workouts and very stressed out. Like, keto is not the greatest thing for every single person every single day. It really depends on what's going on. And so this book that we're writing is really about how to identify your carbohydrate threshold and how to build a diet around that. And it's also, it includes something that was in Dr. Atkins's work that has been lost really from the current keto world. And that is how to transition to adding back in a little bit more carb if and when the time is appropriate for you. You know, I feel like in the keto world, and again, I've made my career also off of keto and low carb, but no, you know, we've demonized carbohydrate a little too much across the board. When people are coming out and telling people that, you know, cantaloupe is poison and lentil, you know, no one ever became obese and diabetic because they ate too many parsnips. you know, or too many roasted beets. So like we've gone a little too far toward demonizing all carbohydrate. It's not that everyone needs to reintroduce more carbs or everyone should, but for the circumstances where it's appropriate, how do you do that? You know, and of course the book is mostly a keto book because unfortunately, in, at least in the industrialized world, majority of people are overweight or obese or do have diabetes or prediabetes. So most people do need to start there. And then over time, though, when and if is it right to maybe transition to something slightly higher in carbs or, and we also, of course, you know, both he and I both have the message of this has become so insanely overcomplicated. So it's really about keeping it simple. And this book, I hope that people out there listening buy it just because they like us and they want to support our work. But to be honest with you, this book is not intended for the biohacker that's been doing keto for 3 years already and has everything optimized and perfect. This is for the person that's brand new to this, that has no idea where to start because they go to the bookstore and there's 8,700 keto books and they're 400 pages long. They've got recipes where a chicken roast costs $80 because it has organic this and free range that and the almond flour and the erythritol and the blah, blah, blah. You know, not that you're putting erythritol on chicken, but you know what I mean? Like this is for people who need to know that you can reverse type 2 diabetes eating fast food burger patties. And you can use artificial sweetener in your coffee. You know, if you don't want to, that's fine. But you can absolutely get massive health improvement without having everything pristine and perfect and expensive. We're trying to just bring this to a much broader audience, to the people that are never gonna be on Twitter writing about autophagy and mTOR and this and that. And like, but their quality of life is impeded by, you know, morbid obesity or diabetes or something. That's who this book is for. But like I said, I hope everybody buys it. But, you know, like you and me, some people are, you're not going to learn anything new from this book. But I will say, reading the sections that we have about keto might remind you of how effective it is getting back to basics. Like in my Stahl Slayer book, there's a chapter on carb creep. That some people, that the only thing standing in their way of weight loss is that they're just eating more carbs than they realize. Mm-hmm. Just overdoing it by a little bit. And so I think our book can be very helpful for that, which is just getting people back to the very, very basics of what works and not worrying about all this extraneous extra complication that has entered the keto world lately.
Yeah, it sounds like there's some interesting conversations in the book. I'm looking forward to it.
Unfortunately, that book isn't slated to come out until November. So don't look for it anytime soon, but everybody keep that on your radar for later in 2020.
Yeah, and we'll remind you and we'll have you back again when it's out. I was having a conversation with somebody on Facebook the other day and they were talking about changes to dietary guidelines and how, you know, everyone needed to be keto. And when you just mentioned there about the broader audience, I think keto is great too. But I don't think it is a majority way of eating. I think there's this massive middle ground that if most of the people in the countries where there are problems ate that way, the general health of the nation would be vastly improved. And yes, there are some people that need to take those extra steps because their metabolism is so damaged of going to keto or carnivore or whatever it is. But the majority of people, if they were in this safe middle ground, would do quite well. So I do think it's interesting to talk about that carb threshold and including things, you know, it doesn't mean you're talking about the really highly refined type carbohydrates. But when you start talking about things like you mentioned, lentils and chickpeas and parsnips and these kind of things that they're not something you'd see in a keto diet. But if you've got a healthier metabolism, a perfectly healthy foods to include.
Exactly. And like you were talking about the guidelines, I think you and I chatted about this the other day. Even people, you know, people like Nina Teicholz and, you know, Zoe Harcombe that we love that are working more politically to get some of those guidelines changed. even they are not saying everyone needs to be keto or keto needs to be the only thing they recommend. We just want it to be included as an option. Let it be a choice among many that people can at least be informed. Hey, if you happen to have type 2 diabetes or obesity or PCOS or something, this option might be the most effective for you. You don't have to do it, but here it is as a perfectly viable option that now your doctor can talk to you about or your dietitian can talk to you about because it's officially endorsed by the government. And then to your other point, that's something that actually Dr. Westman and I mentioned in our book, that part of this book is also intended to appeal to people who have medical issues that would be massively improved by a lower carb diet, but who are never ever going to do a strict ketogenic diet. They're just not going to do it. They don't want to, they're not inclined to, but maybe their health can be very much improved just cutting the carbs to some extent. Maybe they're not going to be perfectly healthy, but they're going to be much healthier than they were just by, let's say, cutting their starch intake in half or by three quarters or whatever it is. Just reduce, you know, when I was in the military, I was in the U.S. Air Force a long time ago. I knew guys that if they started putting on weight, all they had to do was stop drinking beer and they would get right back to a normal weight. Not everyone needs a ketogenic diet. So it's also for those people, the people that are just never, ever, ever going to get on this keto train. Maybe they don't need to.
Yeah. And I think it depends what age you are as well. I mean, I can remember when I was a lot younger, if I just cut out a few of those extra things, I could lose weight a lot more easily than I can now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You young people enjoy that while it lasts. And you men, darn you men, that Y chromosome, it's so good for easier weight loss, not easy, but easier than for most women, right?
That's right. It's yeah, but it's very not fair. But no, that's right. It would just be nice, wouldn't it, to, like you say, have keto, have low carb as an option rather than what is so often the case of having to battle your doctor about it.
Right.
Having to maybe keep it a bit of a secret from them because they're telling you that it's unhealthy. It would be nice when we get to a place when it's actually offered as an option.
Right.
Well, I know you're on a very tight schedule and we're approaching that rapidly. So maybe you could leave us with a top tip.
Yeah. So my top tip, I guess this applies because we were talking about my book, and again, stallslayer.com, little plug for that.
Absolutely.
If we're talking about fat loss, but even if we're talking about just people not getting the results they want with keto in general, my top tip is get really strict. Make sure you are actually in ketosis. Don't kid yourself about, oh, I'll just have a little bit of this, I'll just have a little bit of that. And normally, like if you listening out there have heard me on other podcasts or read my blog or whatever, then you know I usually recommend against measuring and testing for ketones and glucose and all that. But if you are not getting the results you want, in that case, I do recommend maybe doing a little bit of testing because maybe your diet isn't quite where you need it to be. And that's why the results aren't coming. And it could be a matter of eating just 10 or 15 grams of carbohydrate too many for your individual tolerance, especially if you're combining it with a very high fat intake, as if you were on a very strict ketogenic diet. So that's my top tip. Really get an unbiased, objective look at what you're doing and just don't kid yourself.
Yeah, and that's usually what you have to do is just get a bit strict, go to total carbs, really tighten up your act and see what happens. If nothing else, you can be looking to prove yourself wrong, but it's the only way to completely tell, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's hard for me to say that because, like I said, normally I encourage against all the testing and measure. And you don't really have to test. You don't have to test your glucose and ketones if you don't want to, but maybe log and track your food if you don't normally and really get a sense of how much carbohydrate you're actually taking in.
Now, I'm not a great fan of tracking, but I must admit it's the best thing to do if you're just... Yeah, you're just stuck. The only way you can really tell is to really track and be brutally honest because it's very easy to kind of forget things, isn't it? When you're just keeping them in your head, you're forced to write them down when you actually consume them. It's, oh, okay.
Right.
I forgot about those. Okay, well, we'll have all the links in the show notes, but just again, it's stallslayer.com where you can find the book, but we'll have the links in the show notes as usual, and there'll be some links in social media during the week.
And remember, use the code DAISY at checkout for a discount. And you and I think, are going to record another show sometime this summer, maybe just on thyroid. There's a whole chapter in that book dedicated just to the dealing with thyroid issues, which is a massive factor when it comes to stubborn weight loss.
Yes, that's a topic I've really wanted to talk about on the podcast for a while. So I'm looking forward to that. We will record that soon. Well, thank you very much, Amy. It's been a great pleasure to see and talk to you again. Thank you.
You too. Thanks a lot. Take care.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman. Or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages, and DAISY_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at DAISY@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Amy. Seemed like too good an opportunity to miss. I mentioned it in the podcast, and it is taken from her latest book, The Stool Slayer. I suggest not having a goal weight at all. Goals, yes. A goal weight, no. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.